This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of DISH, or diffuse idiopathic skeletal hyperostosis, from the spine section on orthobullets.com. DISH is a very common disorder of unknown etiology that is characterized by back pain and spinal stiffness. It's defined by the presence of non-marginal syndesmophytes at three successive levels involving four contiguous vertebrae. Again, DISH is defined by the presence of non-marginal syndesmophytes at three successive levels involving four contiguous vertebrae. DISH is also known as Forestier disease. It can include enthesopathy of the spine, shoulder, elbow, knee, and the calcaneus. With respect to the epidemiology, as far as the demographics, there is an overall incidence of 6 to 12% of DISH, and it's uncommon before the age of 50 years old. As far as the prevalence, in patients over 50 years old, 25% are males and 15% are females. In patients over 80 years old, 28% are males and 26% are females. DISH is less common in Black, Native American, and Asian populations. With respect to location, it can occur anywhere in the spine, but most commonly in the thoracic spine on the right side, then cervical, then lumbar. This is postulated to be due to the protective effect of the pulsatile aorta on the left of the thoracic spine. Keep in mind that DISH is symmetrical in the cervical and lumbar spine, with syndesmophytes both on the left and right side of the spine. Again, DISH is most common in the thoracic spine on the right side, then the cervical, then the lumbar, and is postulated to be due to the protective effect of the pulsatile aorta on the left of the thoracic spine. Risk factors for DISH include gout, hyperlipidemia, and diabetes. Again, risk factors include gout, hyperlipidemia, and diabetes. With respect to the diagnostic criteria for DISH, again, you need to have flowing ossification along the anterolateral aspect of at least four contiguous vertebrae, preservation of the disc height in the involved vertebral segment, and relative absence of significant degenerative changes, for example, marginal sclerosis in vertebral bodies or what's known as the vacuum phenomenon. Finally, in DISH, you will see absence of facet joint ankylosis, as well as absence of SI joint erosion, sclerosis, or intraarticular osseous fusion. Associated conditions with DISH in the lumbar spine include lumbar spinal stenosis. Associated conditions in the cervical spine include dysphagia and stridor, hoarseness, sleep apnea, difficulty with intubation, and cervical myelopathy. Other associated conditions include spine fracture and instability because ankylosis of the vertebral segments proximal and distal to the fracture creates a long lever arm that causes displacement even in low-energy injuries. Keep in mind that hyperextension injuries are common, and seemingly minor low-energy injury mechanisms may result in unstable fracture patterns. One must have increased vigilance in patients with pain and an ankylosed spine. With respect to the presentation of DISH, patients are often asymptomatic, and it's discovered incidentally. In the setting of thoracic and lumbar involvement, patients may have mild chronic back pain. However, usually the pain is minimal because of stabilization of the spinal segments through ankylosis. As far as stiffness in the setting of DISH, it's usually worse in the morning and aggravated by cold weather. As far as cervical involvement with large anterior osteophytes in the setting of DISH, patients may have pain and stiffness, dysphagia, stridor, hoarseness, and or sleep apnea. On physical exam, you may find decreased range of motion of the spine, as well as neurologic symptoms of myelopathy or spinal stenosis. With respect to imaging, recommended views on radiographs include AP and lateral spine radiographs of the involved region. Findings on radiographs include non-marginal syndesmophytes at three successive levels with four contiguous vertebrae. As far as radiographic findings on the right side, you may find that the thoracic spine is often involved in isolation, particularly T7 to T11, and remember that radiographic examination of this area is helpful when attempting to establish a diagnosis of DISH. With respect to findings in the cervical spine in the setting of DISH, you may see anterior bone formation with preservation of the disc space, which is best seen on the lateral cervical view. Remember that lateral cervical radiographs are useful to differentiate DISH from ankylosing spondylitis. Remember that ankylosing spondylitis will demonstrate disc space ossification, that is fusion between the vertebral bodies. As far as findings in the lumbar spine in the setting of DISH, you may see symmetrical syndesmophytes on the left and right side of the lumbar spine. Keep in mind that you may have other joint involvement in the setting of DISH, for example, the elbow. A technetium bone scan will have an increased uptake in areas of involvement in the setting of DISH, and it may be confused with metastasis. With respect to CT or MRI, patients with DISH that have neck pain and a history of trauma must be evaluated for occult fracture with a CT. With respect to differential, it's important to know how to distinguish DISH from ankylosing spondylitis. So let's talk about the difference between these two diagnoses with respect to the presence of syndesmophytes, how the radiographs appear, how the disc space appears, the presence or absence of osteopenia, HLA involvement, the age group, the SI joint involvement, and the association with diabetes. With respect to syndesmophytes, DISH has non-marginal syndesmophytes and ankylosing spondylitis has marginal syndesmophytes. With respect to the radiographs, DISH is characterized by flowing candle wax, while ankylosing spondylitis is characterized as a bamboo spine, squaring of the vertebral bodies, as well as shiny corners at the attachment of the annulus fibrosus, otherwise known as Romanus lesions. With respect to the disc space, DISH has preservation of the disc space, while ankylosing spondylitis in the cervical spine will show ossification of the disc space. With respect to osteopenia, DISH has no osteopenia, rather there may be increased radiodensity, while in ankylosing spondylitis, osteopenia will be present. With respect to HLA, in the setting of DISH, there is no evidence of association with HLA-B27, however DISH is associated with HLA-B8. This is common in patients with both DISH and diabetes. Remember that ankylosing spondylitis does have a strong association with HLA-B27. With respect to age group, DISH is usually seen in older patients, specifically middle-aged patients, and ankylosing spondylitis will be seen in younger patients. As far as SI joint involvement, DISH has no involvement of the SI joints, and keep in mind that SI joint abnormality generally excludes a diagnosis of DISH. However, in ankylosing spondylitis, you will typically have bilateral sacroiliitis. Finally, with respect to diabetes, DISH is associated with diabetes, and ankylosing spondylitis is not associated with diabetes. The treatment of DISH can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes activity modification, physical therapy, brace wear, NSAIDs, and bisphosphonate therapy. This is typically the treatment course in most cases. Cervical traction is indicated when a patient with DISH has a cervical spine fracture. Remember to use with caution because traction may result in excessive distraction due to the lack of ligamentous structures in patients with DISH. Operative options include spinal decompression and stabilization. This is reserved for specific sequelae, for example, lumbar stenosis, cervical myelopathy, and/or adult spinal deformity. Complications to be aware of in the setting of DISH include mortality and heterotopic ossification. With respect to mortality, for cervical spine trauma in DISH, there will be a 15% mortality rate for those treated operatively and a 67% mortality for those treated non-operatively. Remember that DISH has higher mortality rates than cervical spine trauma with ankylosing spondylitis. However, there are similar mortality rates to patients with ankylosing spondylitis overall. Finally, with respect to heterotopic ossification, there's an increased risk of heterotopic ossification in DISH patients after total hip arthroplasty, specifically 30 to 50% for total hip arthroplasty in patients with DISH and less than 20% for total hip arthroplasty in patients without DISH. That's all for this review about DISH or diffuse idiopathic skeletal hyperostosis. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.